311.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of the 311 Radio Show here every Sunday on VOB 92.9. I'm your host this afternoon, Fire and Life Safety Officer Jason Collins. And today with me, I have Leading Fire Officer Natasha Ford. She's here with us. Good afternoon to you, Natasha.
And a pleasant good afternoon to each and every one of you.
Right. And I also have back someone we had here about 2 weeks ago, if my memory serves me correct. We have the Deputy Manager of the NCSA, which is the National Council of Substance Abuse. We have Mr. Troy Wickham. Good afternoon to you, Troy.
Good afternoon, Jason. Good afternoon, Natasha. And good afternoon for all those listening in VOB country.
Right. It's good to have you back. You know, we had a fairly, Natasha had a really interesting discussion in the last 2 weeks or so ago. And that was, you know, incorporated with the whole crop over season. And, you know, some of us do a bit of consuming of spirits. Some of us do a little too much of it. But this afternoon, we are going to kind of continue on the topic of substance abuse. Ford, may I give us a little recap? Ford, you want to start? But give us a little recap of where we started, where we are, and where we're probably going to go today. So over to you, Ford.
Since I wasn't under the influence of anything, yes, I can certainly do a recap. So the last time we had Mr. Wickham on the show, obviously he would have told us who he is, being the deputy manager, but not only the deputy manager of the NCSA, his background coming from law enforcement and being able to see these things beforehand, he had an appreciation and wanted to do more. So then hence the crossover. We talked about what we can expect when persons before we get to that, we talked about the quantities that shocked me, what is considered a legal dose. And some of us out there have been quite
illegal.
Very much so.
I'm going to have to get the figures for these legal doses.
That is not a problem. I'm sure Mr. Wickham will give you them again.
For sure.
The things that we can look at, how we know when some person is intoxicated, you know, some of the triggers that, I shouldn't say triggers, some of the things that encourage our young people asking our veterans out there, our Calypsonians, those persons who advertise to be conscious of what the messages that they're pushing to our young people. We want persons to have a good time. We're not disputing that fact. But we also want them to recognize that when they do it, they need to do it responsibly. Everybody has a responsibility. It is not only at the manufacturers who make the beverage. Our aim is not to try to consume more than they make. So at the end of the day, we were focusing on things like that. Also, how do we identify when someone is intoxicated? If alcoholism has a face, if we can paint a face on it, if we can look and say, you know what, this person, and we can, as Troy said, we cannot. There are those people out there who do it habitually, and you're not able to point out or to say this person has a substance abuse issues. I'm getting the terms right, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, you are. You're on track.
Learning I recognize you have
exactly. Exactly.
So it is these things that we're looking at. Again, when we're looking at the signs and symptoms, persons would say when he mentioned them, you know, persons not being aware, low blood, Mr. Wickham, help me here. I got some timers right now.
Okay, fine. As I said before, when persons actually do not recognize what we call as binge drinking or heavy drinking, what is a standard drink when they're past the blood alcohol level limit, that is important information for those persons who actually engage in drinking alcohol. That type of information is important for us at the NCSA to actually disseminate to the public. And also, in starting, I'm happy you made the recap so it can continue from where you left off last week. And I must say it's a pleasure to be back on your show. I really enjoyed our last conversation. I'm happy to share information with the public using this forum. So thank you once again for having me on board, Natasha. So let's go.
Most definitely. Down the road, we going. We chipping down the road.
Correct. Correct, though. Yeah. I'd like to start here where we will look at a trend that I see creeping into the Barbadian culture, and that's called mixing alcohol with caffeine drinks.
Interesting.
Yes, yes, yes. Very, very interesting topic. I must say that alcohol is what we know as a classified as a depressant. That is a downer. A depressant basically is classified as a substance which actually causes a person to feel relaxed, tiredness. Is actually they have legitimate uses for depressants against mental illness or sleep deprivation. But however, is the most commonly abused substance. And I must repeat that, is the most commonly abused substance. It's important for us to know that, and it's highly addictive. So alcohol is classified as a depressant. Persons must also know that energy drinks are caffeine-based. And caffeine substances are what we call stimulants. And that is basically an upper, gives you energy, keeps you moving, keeps things going on. And you're mixing what we call two extremes of the scales.
Wow.
You're mixing a depressant with something that will make you feel energetic and stuff like that. So, and caffeine drinks usually contains what we call plant-based caffeine, simple sugars, and additives. So when you mix both of them together, you actually cause the caffeine or the energy drink mask the alcohol. And you will not feel what we call drunk in the Asian parlance. You will not be drunk. You will not feel drunk. So as a result, persons tend to binge drink. I mentioned binge drinking the last time. And binge drinking basically is for female, 4 alcoholic beverages in a 2-hour span, and for male, 5 in a 2-hour span. Exactly. So as a result, persons who actually engage in what we call mixing alcohol with caffeine drinks, they are more likely to binge drink. And it's important to note, research have shown that person between the ages of 15 and 23 who mix alcohol beverages with energy drinks are 4 times more likely to binge drink at high intensity. That's consuming 6 or more drinks in an hour. So I would encourage
persons. In 1 hour, not the 2-hour span.
No, because it's usually sweet and you don't feel that you're getting drunk or high, or you don't feel the buzz. So then you tell yourself, I'm not intoxicated. I can drink and drink and drink.
And well, I don't think I drink to the level like that. Remember, as I said to you earlier, if I just sniff the cork, Jason here, no, he could tell you, I start laughing bad, bad, bad. I
think for me, laughing more, laughing more.
I think I earned the title Chaser Boss because I carry any chaser.
Okay, fine. At least that's a good sign. That's a good sign that you do not actually binge drink or engage or consume too much alcohol.
I think I try to trick people that way. Use the chaser, very drop, like a little drop of the
a little drop of the alcohol.
And yes. Tell people how to get around it. I mean, if you're feeling pressured, for me, that was one of the ways. If I'm feeling, or people, you know, man, take a drink, take a drink. Some people might not want to say no. Let's be realistic. Some people don't want to say no. They don't want to come over as being coward or whatever the case is. And for me, that was an avenue. You know what? All right, turn my back and pour in majority chaser. When you see me put in a little bit of the little drop of thing, you know, the majority of this, just, you know how much I put in? And you drinking like anybody else, you sipping and you taking the whole day.
Well, that is one of the tactics persons use. However, we at the NCSA, we actually have what we call a transitional program into the Project SOF. That program focuses on persons who actually completed the secondary school entrance exam, commonly known as the common entrance exam.
Uh-huh.
And during that time, we actually we have a residential component where we actually look at teaching those young kids refusal skills. Skills. It's important. We recognize that's important to different ways to say no. ways to say no. Not just saying no. There's different ways to say no. And we also buttress that with what we call evidential evidence-based approaches. to giving them the facts surrounding the early consumption of any substance and the damage it can cause to the brain, because those persons are young teenagers or young adults. Their brains are still developing. And those persons who actually use substances at young ages, research have shown that those persons are more likely to become addicts in their adulthood. That's
important. Can we bring it again? You did say that we have persons from the ages of as young as 8 years old
who actually admitted to using some substance in their lifetime.
Scary.
Yeah, yes, yes. And I also said that one of the main sources of these substances is the family, the home. And that's important. As you may know, as I said in our last conversation, there are persons who actually, for festive periods such as Cropover and Christmas time, and there's a lot of alcohol in the homes. And I remember when I was young, around age 7 or 8, my great grandmother would say, "Have a shot of that brandy for the worms."
It is true.
Have a shot of that. That's a cultural thing.
Correct. And
that, yeah, not Zantel. Exactly. Not the other word, Mason. Yep.
No. And that actually creates an appetite, a taste for alcohol at an early age.
Correct.
You have appetite for alcohol. Some medications contain alcohol, cough syrups, etc. So we actually give our children or expose our children to substances early, sometimes unwillingly. And they give them an appetite for the taste for alcohol. And those are things we must educate parents about. We have several programs here at the NCSA, which actually speaks directly to that. We engage parents at various levels in the schools. We have parent programs, and that is important. We also have parent program in our counseling program to help parents cope and to manage how their children who are impacted by substance abuse and how to relate to them. And this is important for us here at the NCSA.
All right, so you mentioned something earlier, and you said, and it brings me back to when I think about the agents of socialization. And you know, the agents of socialization, when we talk about them, we talk about the family, and we talk about the society, and we talk about church and peers and such. Like, now, are you tackling, no, not so much, well, then again, can I even include the church? Because I know persons talk about, especially when it comes to communion, we have alcohol inside the theater. And I know I've seen some churches, yes, not all, I'm saying some churches, they use fermented wine. And I know we have some young children in churches who are baptized or confirmed or whatever the case is. Should we be allowing our children, and I'm not attacking the church, I'm just asking a question, if we're going to be talking about the social agent, should we be allowing our children then, in a case like this, to be taking the wine? As we said earlier, if you go there, the blocks where you're out there with your peers, and as I said, you have the bottles, about 53 bottles of whatever it is lined up as badges on the road when you pass. Are you getting into each and every one of these socializing agents or agencies or whatever to carry the message? I know you said you've done it in school. You have the parenting program, but what again about the church and such like these others?
Okay, very interesting question. And thank you for that question. Let me say, yes, we have programs with faith-based organizations. It's important for us, as a tiny organization with just 20 odd persons who are on staff, to engage as many publics as possible as it relates to drug education. And we have seen it fit to engage faith-based organizations, let them be an agent for the NCSA and to spread the word. Persons may think that because persons are participants of good church, they have all the information as it relates to substance abuse and substance use. We must remember substance abuse and substance use is a taboo subject in Barbados. No one wants to hold the bull by the horns and speak to substance use and substance abuse. As you mentioned, obviously in your recap, persons see an addict as a parole, a dirty person on the road, an unkempt person. But we must come to the realization that substance addicts, such as addiction, is a public health issue and is a mental health issue. And persons, it doesn't have a face. Persons go to work daily, as I said before, function normally. However, they must have a drink before they start work. They must have a drink at any break they have. They must have a smoke. And that is something we need the public to understand. Substance users does not have a face. And faith-based organizations, we have engaged them to assist us with spreading the word in the church, spreading the word in the community. That's important for us. As many arms as possible we engage, the more the word will be spread and the education will be obviously improved.
Now, I know a lot of people will be wondering or asking the question, why are we, the Barbados Fire Service, looking at the substance abuse so highly? Were we talking about it so much and such? But I want to draw the correlation now between the two. When persons drive under the influence of alcohol, there are things that happen. And again, as I would have read out the statistics the last time, the amount of responses, we had an increase of 43% in MVAs, and that is motor vehicular accidents. We're not saying that everybody that had an accident was under the influence of alcohol, but we also want persons to recognize that some of these persons who would have died, these younger persons who would have died in these car crashes, who were under the influence. And yes, it was determined after. Those who lost their life, they impacted on the economy, they impacted on their family. These were in some cases productive citizens who were adding to the economy, who were adding to their family. I know that is a family that is missing them. Those persons who were able to get out alive but had serious injuries. You see, we see an accident and we only think in terms of one impact, and that is the vehicle hitting whatever collision. But we fail to realize that there are three impacts there. If you are going at 80 miles, you know what, then you're stepping. So we go past 80, we probably at 100, 120, you know? And we step in. And when you impact or you hit something else, remember that the force that you are going at, the speed that you're going at, the vehicle is going at, you are also going at because you're inside that vehicle. And when there's this sudden deceleration, when you impact or hit on something, what happens then? Jason, you want to tell me? You want to educate? Because you're real quiet behind here.
Well, this year we talk about the tree collision, the vehicle hit it, the vehicle striking, whatever object stops it or that it hits. And then you have your body colliding with the interior of that vehicle. And then you have your organs within your body. And this is one that a lot of people do not even think about or are aware of. But your organs, your internal organs that obviously are going to collide with your body.
Other internal organs and your body.
At whatever speed that you're traveling at. So imagine you traveling as Ford alluded to 120. The vehicle struck that object 120. Your body struck the vehicle at that same speed. Your organs are hitting each other and your body at that same speed. So you are, and that's what we talk about, the three stage collision. And that we only see the first stage, which is the vehicle hitting whatever object it strikes. But that internal one is the one that usually what we call kill people or, you know, give people serious injury, a long-term injury and so on, because that's the one that we don't see. That's what you see sometimes. There's an accident and a person say, I'm okay. They may seem visually okay. There are so many things that are going on within your body that we don't even know. Sometimes we are the person, the victim themselves cannot even feel what is going on inside, but something might be going on inside of them terribly wrong. And Ford, as an emergency medical technician, would be able to obviously even go even further than I will tell you as it relates to that. You know, so that's exactly what she's speaking about when she speaks about the three collision.
Right. So, Mr. Wickham, now here's where you come in. How does alcohol, how does drug abuse, whether it be alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, how does it impair our judgment to react in a timely manner or to do what we're supposed to do?
Okay, fine. Again, interesting question coming from you. from you, Natasha. Let me say, as you started to say before, alcohol, substances, usually our most recent research project, which was the Barden 2020 report, indicate that predominantly our most productive citizens, and I must repeat, our most productive citizens are using or abusing substances, which would obviously, as you say, cause a ripple effect in terms of productivity, in terms of the home, in terms of jobs availability, in terms of the judicial system, because those persons come in contact with the judicial system. And of course, unfortunately, sometimes death. And this is important, very important to note. However, as no actually addressing the question that you asked, persons who abuse or misuse alcohol may experience or exhibit signs or any one or a combination of these things that were mentioned. Anxiety. Some persons actually black out, blurred vision, dizziness, drowsiness, fatigue, forgetfulness, hangovers, headaches, lower inhibition, slurred speech, stammering. Sometimes they even go as far as to be violent. And vomiting excessively. That's when it called alcohol poisoning. So then, imagine me driving my vehicle, going on Highway 2A, maybe as you said before, stepping, doing over 100. And I'm under the influence of alcohol, and specifically using alcohol here. And I'm drowsy, I'm having blurred vision. It actually, as I said, alcohol is a depressant, so it slows down the central nervous system.
Right.
So my reaction time will obviously slow down. So thinking, processing the sight picture in front of me, as the oncoming vehicle, oncoming walls, oncoming objects, my central nervous system is slowed down. So my reaction time will be slowed. So I'm at greater risk to myself and the public. And that's what we call problematic substance use. When your substance use become problematic to yourself and the body community.
But in addition to Troy, I know most of these things happen in the night. And what I will say to you, I think all of us as drivers could attest to it. If you are not aware of where you're going at night, it can be fairly difficult to make judgment calls on the road driving at night. I mean, generally, on a normal night, under no influence or anything of that sort. So imagine being under the influence and your judgment is impaired because of being under the influence. And then you have that with the added impaired judgment of it being nighttime. That's a recipe for disaster, for sure.
Totally agree. Let me say that you may travel a particular route daily, by day. Try traveling that route at night.
Correct.
It looks so different. Correct. Like, mm-hmm. I'm on the correct road. And sometimes, especially in the countryside of Barbados, let's face the facts, it's poorly lit.
Exactly.
Some roads are very dark.
And then everybody's vehicles either modified or came with LED lighting, and it's the lights coming at you are extremely bright. And we know that bright lights, and if you're already under influence and everything else that's going on, creates a complete blur for you. So, I mean, for persons who are not under the influence, it is a challenge already. So can you imagine being under the influence and having, you know, those things to deal with?
Yes, and I can safely say that there is a direct correlation between our department and your department. Obviously, unfortunately, you come at the back end of the particular
when it has gone wrong. Unfortunately,
we are at the prevention department. We focus on prevention as much as possible. Our aim is to prevent persons from actually engaging in substance use or abuse. Using facts is important. It's important to know we try not to take away a person's choices as well. That's important. Before, many years ago, in prevention science, it was okay just to say no. But prevention science has gone way beyond that, because it's when you tend to try to take away a person's choices, they tend to try to do the opposite, or you will get what we call reactants. Person says, who are you to tell me don't do this? I will show you will do it. I will show you will do it. But it's important for us to have the facts, show the person the what I call the causation, the link between substance use and vehicular accidents, substance use and poor productivity at work, substance use and
family, everything else.
Exactly. Yeah. As I said recently, our Barnard report, we look at how much it costs to actually incarcerate someone.
Yeah.
And how much it costs for prevention or for treatment.
I have something that you just say, it comes over a bit harsh, but I always tell people from my experience, metal and human flesh don't go well together. And that's the reality. This is, you know, it makes so harsh, but these are things that we see. And any fire officer would tell you that, you know, we've seen some things and you don't want to be on the wrong side of an accident, especially due to that kind of thing. And the thing about it, if you're under the influence, you don't even have a chance to break, or because you probably may lose consciousness, you may fall asleep, something like that. So you don't even have a chance to kind of soften the or anything, because you're not even fully aware of what's going on around you. So yeah.
That's why it's important. I always say, if you have to drink, if you plan to go to have fun, just past the crossover period, have a designated driver. Or walk with taxi fare.
I agree.
Walk with taxi fare.
You know that I don't drink, it could be the designated driver.
Walk with the designated driver. It saves lives. And we are about saving lives here. And you are about saving lives as well.
Yeah.
It saves lives. I'm sure that no one in the listening public will want to actually be the cause of someone's death or permanent injury. And you have to live with that. Remember, you have to live with that for the rest of your life if you're a survivor. And you don't want to be that person.
Even to the person themselves, they don't want, I mean, it is okay to know that you wake up one morning, you have all your faculties, limbs working perfectly. Then when you get in an accident and you become some person with a disability. Right. And for some people, it is very hard to comprehend. It is very hard to come to grips with. So as you're saying, you know what? Think about the choices that you are going to make. Make informed decisions, make informed choices that at the end of the day, you know what? Not only your life that you have in your hands, but the others out there on the road. We're not saying accidents are not going to happen, but it is the choices that you make in life that will make a difference and that will impact on others. Now, with the 2 minutes that we have remaining, Troy, there is something that you said I want to get back to quickly. You say that you have, I'm not sure you say that you have some in-house training program or something for children who are going over transitioning from primary school into secondary school. Within the 2 minutes that we have, well, less than 2 minutes, could you tell us some more about that and how parents can get their children involved?
Okay, fine. I'm happy because I was just going there. It's Project Solve. Entitled Project Solve, Safeguard Our Children's Future Today. That project actually, we obviously because of COVID or something like that, that camp will be now held in November of this year. We are looking forward. Feel free to visit our website. We have a nominal cost of $40 for persons who are actually signed up. There's obviously a vetting process. You call the contact the NCSA at 535-6272. Or go to our website at www.ncsa.gov.pb. There's a form to be completed. You can call me, Troy Wickham, again, 535-6272. They give you all the information you need. It's important that as many persons reach out to us as possible. We will engage you all. We are happy to have you on board. We have a counselor on board as well. Our counselor is 232-1920. That is 832-1920. That's 832. Her name is Miss Natalia Corbin Eiffel. Or you can contact our main line, that's 535-6272. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. Feel free at any time. We are here to help. We're here to help. We're here to help. I'm not taking away your choice.
Well,
we give you the facts.
Thank you very much. We are completely out of time. We have to run off. Thank you so much, Mr. Troy Wickham, for joining us. Natasha Ford, leading fire officer. I am Fire Life Safety Officer Jason Collins. We had a wonderful 311 radio show. Have a wonderful week. And as we always say at the end of the show, fire prevention is our intention.
One.